The journey back to the gateway through the blighted land wasn't entirely without incident. None of the muty birds that had besieged the store at the entrance to the ghost town came after them, but the fog grew steadily thicker and more menacing, making it less than easy to find the trail, with none of the compasses working at all. They picked up the old road along the side of the slow-running sinister river without any problems, taking care to keep as far away as possible from the strange semi-liquid flow, avoiding attack from any of its lethal denizens.
I'm thirsty.
Dean walked a little way off the trail, looking for pools of water trapped amid the frost-riven boulders.
Don't go too far out of sight, Dean.
All right, Dad. Got some...
Dean?
Okay, Dad. Sipped in a rain spill. Tasted just like bullock's piss.
How do you know, Dean? You ever drunk the piss of a bullock?
Dean reappeared, wiping his mouth, gobbing in the dirt.
Real funny, Michael. Real fucking funny.
Best not to try to eat or drink anything while we're here. We'll soon be back at the gateway, make a jump, then we'll get something.
The track began to wind upward, and they eventually reached the rotting stump of the huge tree that they remembered from the walk down from the gateway. The huge albino maggots that had infested it had all mysteriously vanished. While they stood at the bend in the track, something scuttled out of the mist, almost under Mildred's feet, making her jump back. It was like a string of mottled greenish pebbles strung together with threads of gristle, about 4 feet long, with no apparent eyes or mouth. Without pausing, it snaked across the path and vanished once more into the coils of mist.
Real little valley of the shadow of death, isn't it?
The rank vegetation became more sparse, eventually thinning out completely, leaving them on the narrow rutted trail that climbed higher between the granite walls. A small wound on Ryan's neck was stinging, and he touched it, finding that it was leaking a colorless liquid. He brought his finger to his nose and smelled it. There was the unmistakable odor of corruption. Christy saw the gesture and moved to walk alongside him.
Problem?
Septic poisoning from that mutie back in the store. You can't wash it until we get clean water.
The light's not good enough to see it properly.
Christy touched it gently.
Ah!
Sorry, didn't mean...
Sore.
Feels hot. Best keep an eye on it.
I know, I already said that.
Fine. You don't have to snap at me like that when I'm trying to help you.
Sorry. Bit ragged at the edge.
Sure.
They reached the narrow ledge of hewn rock, with a circular entrance to the small Matrans unit opening off it. Doc was panting hard, his face pale in the silvery evening light. Now they were well above the mist, and it was like looking down onto a gently moving sea of fresh-picked cotton.
I shall have no regrets about departing from this place. My heart is working like a leaking pump, and the breath sours in my throat.
You want to take a rest, Doc?
No, no. My thanks, dear fellow. But the sooner we get the next jump over, the better I shall be pleased.
Doc straightened, taking some of his weight on the elegant sword stick.
Let us leave this peak above Darien.
It took only moments for them to walk along the cramped tunnel and into the makeshift control room. The battered wooden door swung slowly back on its hinges. Great tangles of multicolored wire hung from the broken rectangles of chipboard ceiling. One of the overhead neon lights was flickering erratically, its glow reflected in the vein of green quartz that seamed the bare rock above. Christy ran a finger over the top of one of the comps, her red hair darkened by the blue screen.
I can't believe that this place has existed so long in this condition.
Like Michael said when we jumped here, some of the stone still has marks of the chisel, fresh as yesterday's sunrise.
With the acid rain and all those muties, you'd have likely thought something would have broken in here 50 years ago.
JB took off his glasses and began to wipe them clean from the smearing mist. Dean had gone back out into the corridor, but suddenly reappeared.
Think there's something coming, Dad.
What?
Can't tell. Just a noise like wet clothes being dragged over a cold stone floor.
What?
Real big load.
Ryan glanced out into the rocky passage, seeing nothing but darkness and a few stray fingers of white mist that were feeling their way into the complex. He listened in the stillness, but he couldn't hear anything.
I heard it, Dad.
I believe you, Dean.
Ryan closed the flimsy door, aware that it wouldn't do much to deter even a sickly kitten. JB had carefully perched his spectacles back on the bridge of his bony nose, He glanced at Ryan.
We go?
Reckon so.
The granite vault of the anteroom was starkly empty, and the door of the gateway chamber still stood ajar, as they'd left it only a few hours earlier. Ahead of them, the dark gray armaglass walls of the unit were a patchwork of green and yellow lichen.
Like getting into a toad's belly.
Ryan shepherded them in, one at a time, though nobody was keen to squat on the cold floor. Like the whole of the region, there was something fundamentally unclean and unhealthy about the ill-lit gateway. Doc leaned uncertainly against the far wall, finally sitting down. He checked that the Lamar was snug in its holster.
Come then, my friends, and let's away to seek the fortunes of a gentler day.
Is that real Shakespeare, Doc, or just one of your own?
The truth, my sweet Dr. Wyeth, is that I have completely forgotten.
J.B. took his place next to Mildred. Michael and Dean were waiting their turn, with Christy and Ryan.
Was...
Yeah. I think I heard it too, lover. Like Dean said.
The picture that sprang unbidden into Ryan's mind was of a giant snail making its inexorable way through the fog toward them, leaving a wide trail of stinking slime.
Quick!
He pushed his son and Michael into the Matrans unit, drawing his six hour and glancing again behind him. Christy joined the others, sitting down, but back against the wall, leaving a space for Ryan to complete the circle. Ryan pulled the door shut behind him, but realized that he hadn't heard the lock that triggered the actual mechanism of the jump.
It didn't...
I know it fucking didn't.
Ryan opened it and slammed it shut more firmly, aware through the gap in the door of a shadowy bulk gliding across the control area toward him. Ryan knew that the creature, whatever it was, had entered the control area less than 30 feet away from the hexagonal chamber. Most of the Matrans units were firmly built of almost impregnable armaglass set into the solid concrete of the main redoubt. But this one had shown all the marks of hasty and amateurish workmanship. With the flaws and cracks in the armaglass, it probably wasn't even proof against a decent handgun.
Did it shut?
Couldn't tell. Noise outside.
Try it again.
Michael stood now, holding his Texas Longhorn Border Special in both hands. There was something barely visible through the gray walls, the same thing that Ryan had glimpsed in the nanosecond when the door had been opened.
I do believe that... was the phrase? That all systems are go.
Doc was the calmest of them all, perhaps because he wasn't yet aware of the horror that was approaching the Matrans unit from the ravaged world beyond. Ryan glanced down, seeing the metal discs in the floor were beginning to glow through their coating of moss, and the upper half of the chamber was filling with the familiar white mist, quite unlike the acrid fog outside.
Sit down, Michael.
Ryan took his own place alongside Christy, the Sig Sauer leveled at the door. The light beyond the chamber was blocked out, and Ryan tightened his finger on the trigger. The blackness was streaked with dreams that mixed past and present into a bizarre future, where reality and fantasy were inseparable and indistinguishable, where time and place were familiar and strange. The woman who stood by the bed was someone who Ryan thought he knew. She was tall and blonde, skinny, part woman and part child, and wore an obscenely short skirt of soft red material.
Suede.
With a fringe. Her legs seemed to begin at her shoulders and were encased in scarlet boots with silver spurs, decorated with tiny bells.
Lori.
That seemed to be the right name for her, though he wasn't sure. Ryan watched her with his good eye, straining to turn his head to follow her movements. He was aware that he was naked and cold, his breath clouding out into the air in front of him. Tied by the wrists to the corners of the bed, ankles spread to the bottom of the bed. Not a bed, just a metal frame, with narrow strips of steel running from side to side, digging into his hips and spine and shoulders.
Lori?
He saw the face, the fringe of hair so blonde it was almost white. The makeup around her eyes turned them into dark, smudged pits. Her lips were pale and narrow, unsmiling. Ryan tested the ropes, but they weren't ropes. Steel handcuffs biting into his wrists. Chains were around his ankles.
Keep still, Ryan Cotter. Don't move or you're dead. Dead men don't move. Quint don't move. Quint dead.
Ryan turned from her, looking around the room. There was a single overhead light, a naked bulb that swung slowly from side to side. There was no other furniture, except a small marble table that stood on wrought iron legs. Some articles rested on the table, but it was just beyond the periphery of Ryan's right eye. On the walls were a number of tattered old vid posters, a few with the names of ancient pre-dark movies that Ryan had heard about. He'd even seen speckled copies of some of them, projected on sheets with temperamental gas generators. The moving light sent a dancing arc of brightness swinging over the posters.
Chances are running out, Ryan.
What chances?
Chances to tell me, to save yourself.
I don't understand.
I thought knocking your teeth out one at a time might have helped your memory.
Then Ryan felt the pain flooding through both jaws, and he could taste the bitter iron of his own blood.
All my teeth?
Speak properly.
You knocked out all of my teeth? You fucking slut.
He felt her hand on him, her finger and thumb squeezing gently at the tender skin inside the top of his thigh. She pinched harder, the pain burning, making him arch his back off the bed.
Hurts, does it? Oh, I'll kiss it and make it better.
Her lips, nibbling so softly, moved higher, her hand cupping his scrotum, forcing him to an erection that could have bent an iron bar.
Now you're ready to tell me, Ryan.
What?
She smiled, showing stained, broken teeth.
You know what, lover.
I don't.
Whatever happened, he wouldn't beg. Traitor would never beg. No point. She was stroking him again, bringing him tremblingly close to the brink of ejaculation. Ryan thought that he'd burst if she went on for just 10 more seconds.
Know what I'm going to do?
She moved out of his vision and picked something up from the table.
No.
Lori held up a coil of pale yellow tubing with a greasy exterior.
See this? Know what it is?
Ryan did know, but it seemed to have slipped his memory.
I don't remember, Lori.
Slow fuse.
A fuse?
It's a length of slow fuse. I call it my friendly persuader, Ryan.
Like for setting off a bomb?
Very good.
What are you gonna do with it?
She was running it through her fingers, caressing it, bringing it to her lips to touch it with her long tongue.
It'll burn anywhere, even without oxygen. Underwater. Anywhere. Once it's lit, it'll burn.
I know.
She smiled and touched his throbbing penis.
Put the fuse anywhere and light it.
Her fingers moved up the shaft toward the flat, muscular wall of his stomach.
I'll insert it slowly and carefully, Ryan. Oh, you'd be surprised what a long way it'll go. And nothing can put it out. There are so many orifices of the human body that can receive it.
So Traitor said that a man shouldn't ever beg for mercy. Well, fuck that.
Please, please don't.
Just tell me.
What?
The fuse was glowing almost white hot, like a fiery worm devouring itself, defecating white ash, moving very slowly, a millimeter at a time.
Tell me everything.
I can't.
The horror was the way her left hand kept him agonizingly erect, despite the appalling thing that she was going to do to him.
Start at the beginning. Place of birth.
Front Royalville in the Shants.
Parents?
Baron Titus and Lady Cynthia Carter.
Brothers and sisters?
Two brothers, Morgan and I can't remember the other one's name.
He blinded you.
I know.
His name?
Harvey. That was it. Harvey.
The glowing tip of the burning fuse was an inch away from the tip of his organ.
Stoop! Think I give a flying fuck about your family? Or about anything you say? I don't, Ryan. Couldn't care less.
Then, why?
She leaned over him, and he could taste the rotten sweetness of her breath.
Reminds me of a girl I knew out in Las Cruces. One day she went into the desert and found a prairie rattler. Put her hand out to make it bite her. It did. They carried her back dying, arm black and shining from finger to shoulder. I asked her that same question. Asked her why she did it.
And?
Said that it seemed a good idea at the time.
Oh, 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 oh.
Ryan felt the mind-toppling agony as she started to slide the burning fuse inside him. Aware that his body was straining off the bed, the steel cutting into wrists and ankles.
Ryan!
Ryan tried to punch at her, but the grip on his wrist was too tight.
Take it easy.
Just a bad jump, Lover. Come on.
She's fighting like a bastard to get free.
Ryan opened his eye. He was spread-eagled flat on his back in a gateway chamber. Doc was lying across his legs, with Mildred helping him. Dean stood looking down at him, his face confused and frightened. Ryan managed a thin smile for his son.
Don't hurry.
He means for you not to worry, Dean.
Ryan was finding it difficult to focus, but his vision was filled by Christy's tumbling mane of bright crimson hair, hanging across his face as she concentrated on holding him still. JB was on the other side, with Michael across his upper body.
Treating me like a rabbit panther. I'm fine now.
Bad jump?
Yeah, but you can let me go now.
Ryan was uncomfortably aware that the front of his dark blue pants was tighter than usual, though the residual erection was slowly subsiding. He hoped that nobody had noticed it. They all moved away cautiously, allowing him to sit up and lean against the armorglass walls of the chamber, which were a rich cobalt blue.
Everyone else, all right?
Unlikely as it may be, my dear Ryan, we all came through this particular jump with colors flying, bands playing, girls scattering flowers and ticker tape tumbling.
Hot pipe of a jump, Dad.
Was I out long?
Couple of minutes. But you were screaming and fighting. Want to tell me about it?
No. Not now, and not ever, Lover. Best get out and see where we are.
I recognize this color. These dark blue walls. Reckon we might have been here before.
Mildred ran the flat of her hand over the silk-smooth armorglass.
Not me. Lovely color.
It seemed familiar to Ryan, but he couldn't locate it in his memory.
The bayous.
Yeah, you're right. Place we first met up with Jack Lauren.
Ryan recalled the heat that percolated all the way down through the sectors of vanadium steel into the heart of the Matrans unit and the humidity. Bayou country. The Cajuns, Lafayette, Baron Termal, the swamps and alligators. It had been a time of violence on their previous visit to the place. Oddly, in all the jumps that they'd made, Ryan couldn't recall finishing up in the same redoubt twice. Since they had no real control over the destination of any of their jumps, that had to be a statistical oddity. Christy wiped a tiny bead of perspiration from her upper lip.
Of course. Ace on the line there, JB, remembering that. The dark blue armorglass walls.
Unless there's someplace similar.
Ryan found his breathing was slowing back to normal. His nightmare erection finally subsided.
Don't find heat like this in many parts of Deathlands. We gonna take a look outside?
Sure.
Ryan tried to recall the layout beyond the control room of the gateway. He had a memory of dense, fetid swamps with giant skeeters and a broken, rotted causeway over the muddy bayou water. Christy's face had a sheen of perspiration.
Could be we might meet up with some of Jack's old friends. Get some good fried pork and beans and plenty of fresh spring water. You could hold the pork and the beans and I'll just settle for the drink. Another half hour of this and I'll have dehydrated down to a little puddle on the floor.
Then we'll go take a look.
Outside the chamber, they saw the same notice that they'd seen a number of times before. Entry absolutely forbidden to all but B-12 cleared personnel, Matrans. The usual massive sectors were down and closed. The green lever at the side pointed to the floor. Ryan laid his hand on it and glanced at the others.
Ready?
Blasters were drawn. JB crouched on the floor, gripping the Uzi on full auto, preparing himself to peer under the lifting doors in case anyone, or anything, waited outside. It had happened before. Ryan noticed that Michael looked a little pale and worried, licking his lips, breathing fast.
You all right, Michael?
Yes, of course. Just hot, and damp, and thirsty as well. What are you waiting for?
Nothing.
Ryan pushed the lever upward. He halted the door after 6 or 8 inches, giving the armorer the chance to peek through the gap.
Nothing.
The corridor outside was about 10 feet wide. Pale cream seamless stone curved to the right. The arched roof was about 12 feet high. Ryan led the way, noting the sec barriers concealed in the ceiling and the tiny vid cameras every 40 paces set in the angle between wall and roof. The passage bent around and around, always to the right, confirming Ryan's memory from the previous visit to that particular redoubt that it was going to complete a full 360 degrees.
Here's the doors. They open onto the outside, triggered by some kind of remote scope lock. Just walk up to it and it'll open.
Lori showed us, didn't she?
Christy glanced toward Doc, who had once been infatuated with the tall blonde woman.
Pretty sweet child. In my sleep, I still hear the tinkling of those tiny silver bells on her boots. Such a dear girl.
The room opened off the corridor and was about 30 feet square, with the smudged marks on the blank walls, where pictures or posters had been hung, pulled down in the last dying, rad-blighted days before the long winters. Dean had moved alongside his father, and now ran toward the dull metal of the heavy double doors at the far side of the room. For a moment, it looked like he was going to bump into them, but at the last moment, they began to slide back.
Dean!
Yeah?
Ryan beckoned for him to take his place in the skirmish line.
Wait here.
Thought you'd been here before, Dad. Knew that it was a safe place.
Just because it was safe then, it doesn't mean that it'll still be safe.
It'll probably be fine, Dean. We'll know soon.
The air was much hotter beyond the sliding sec doors, like trying to breathe with a warm cloth over your face. Ahead of them, through the enormously wide doorway, they could all see a straight, brightly lit section of corridor, less wide than the one outside the gateway chamber, that stretched 200 yards toward a blank steel wall with a single, ordinary door set in its center.
There's the open country beyond that. Redoubts covered with creepers and thick vegetation. We figured that was what kept it safe and hidden.
Can I go look, Dad?
Ryan touched a hand to the small wound on his neck, wincing at the stinging pain and a swelling that felt tender and badly infected.
No! Fireblast, Dean, will you just stay where you're told?
Sorry, Dad.
Ryan led the way. For a moment, he nearly turned on his companions and snapped at them to be quieter, but he managed to control himself. He decided that his irritation was probably because of the tropical heat. His recollection of the redoubt from when they first explored it was that it had been spotlessly clean, with hardly a grain of dust. Now he noticed that the floor was smudged with gray mud, carrying the faint marks of boots. On the wall was the single piece of graffiti that he remembered from before, stenciled neatly in olive-green paint on the right-hand section of concrete, just above shoulder height, the single word, goodbye. Ryan reached the door and paused. He checked that everyone had their guns drawn and ready, then pushed at the door.
Opens the other way. I remember poor old Hennings made that mistake.
Hennings had been a tall black guy off Warwag 1, with a lacerating sense of humor. But it had done him no good when a musket ball had struck him just above the right eye. It hadn't been all that far away from where they now stood, inside the outer portal to the redoubt. Ryan turned the handle and pulled the door toward him, feeling it open easily. He took a careful step out, expecting to see the lush vegetation of the bayous.
What kind of animals?
Gaia.
Dean, Mildred, and Michael were less surprised than the others, never having been to the place before, not having known what to expect there. There had been young pecan trees and groves of cypresses, their roots dipping into the water, live oaks and graceful elms, all of them covered in delicate shrouds of Spanish moss, like veiled duennas.
Gone.
Gone.
There was bottomless mud. Water that became watery mud. I disremember, but I believe I have said this before. Shall I say it again? Yes. I will enter the round Zion of... My apologies, friends. Water into mud, bottomless. And now, all vanished away. And only we remain.
The swamps had disappeared. Now, as far as they could see ahead of them, was a sun-baked desert. Here and there they could see darker patches that might once have been mud wallows, might once have been small pools. But they could never, by any stretch of the most fervid imagination, have been the endless bayous of old Louisiana. J.B. leaned a hand against the side of the door, staring out in utter disbelief.
The trees are gone.
It's a different redoubt. Of course. That's it.
But I remember that single melancholy word on the wall. It struck at my heart with its infinite sadness when I first saw it. And it strikes now. No, my dear friends, this is the same redoubt. But everything else has altered beyond all comprehension.